Hi, this is Austin Hill. Hey, thanks for checking out this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. Now, you can hear our program live weekday morning, 6 till 8 Central Time. There are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows. They're available online. Our web address, of course, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
Good morning, 6:04. Welcome to Wednesday. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Honored to be with you weekday morning, 6 till 8, as we seek to connect faith to life. It is still Pastor Appreciation Month. We are not out of October as yet. That's good news, actually. That means you have time to nominate the pastor of your church to win a very, very nice gift that we'll be giving away at the end of the month. The gift of a retreat, an 8-day retreat customized for people who serve in ministry. Just get over to our mobile-friendly website, myfaithradio.com, and register your pastor. We'll tell you more about that coming up later this morning on our program. Given that it is Wednesday, this is customarily the day that we check in with our great friend Bill English at BibleAndBusiness.com. Bill English from BibleAndBusiness.com, no stranger to Faith Radio listeners. He'll be with us actually into the next hour. This very, very interesting news out. I would say even conflicting news. And I think among the church community, among the Christian community, we need to be particularly discerning about this because there was this news headline. In fact, they were talking just a little bit about this in the SRN newscast a few moments ago. This news headline that just grabbed attention all over the place. In fact, it came out pretty much just shortly after we wrapped up this broadcast, our morning show, yesterday, which is 8 a.m. Central Time, obviously. But this news headline that said, oh, wow, look at this. Americans' confidence in the economy is higher than it has been for, well, they said since October of 2007. Look at how confident Americans are feeling about the economy. This is great, and this means that people will go shop, 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 and buy, buy, buy during the holiday gift-giving season, the Christmas season, and that's good for the economy, and happy days are here again. And this this headline, it got repeated over and over and over and over and over again. Now, I'll give you the kind of the backstory about where this headline came from, but as recently as 3 weeks ago, a nonprofit group called the National Federation of Independent Business, NFIB. This is a volunteer private organization, kind of a membership sort of group that small business owners around the country belong to. And the NFIB surveyed small business owners around the country, and small business owners were saying something quite different. Not the exact opposite of what the headlines were yesterday, but small business owners were saying, yeah, we're probably not going to spend a lot of money here in the fourth quarter of 2014, or not even over the Christmas season and not into the first quarter of next year. And we were kind of hoping that we'd be able to, you know, go out and buy some new equipment for the office or buy a new vehicle for our company or whatever. But we're not sure what to make of things. It's a little more tentative out there in the economy. We're going to play it safe. Now, I think scripturally we always need to be people of discernment and prudence and watch these things carefully. But what are we to make of one group of people in our culture that says, everything's great, no worries, and another group of people who are saying, eh, let's be cautious. We'll talk about that with Bill English, that and more, coming up into the 7 o'clock hour. Also, are pastors in America, pastors just generally, are they at risk for being arrested? Arrested for no other activity than simply fulfilling their pastoral duties. We'll meet an attorney coming up just about half an hour who says, yes, that is the case, and we should be prepared to face that situation with our pastors. That and more as we continue. When we return, let's talk about people who are skeptical about the claims of Christ. You'll meet an author of a book who addresses that one. When we come back here on Faith Radio, it's now 6:08. I'm Austin Hill. Network. Good morning. It's Wednesday, and I am Austin Hill. Glad
what
you're
if
with
Jesus
us.
Were put on trial?
Well, put on trial for what, you might ask? Well, let's think about this for a moment. What if the claims that Jesus made about himself were put on trial, put through the rigors of American jurisprudence and through those lenses of inquiry we sought to analyze? Is what Jesus said about himself true? Do those claims add up with historical and cultural evidence? My next guest has written a book on the subject. He's a New York Times best-selling author. He's an attorney by training and profession. He's also a nationally syndicated columnist. He says that he's had a life journey that took him from a determined skeptic to a devout believer. David Limbaugh on our guest line. His latest book is called Jesus on Trial. David Limbaugh, welcome to our program. Good to talk to you.
Awesome. You too. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure. What made you set out to write this very interesting book, Jesus on Trial?
Well, I became a believer probably 20 years ago, so let's be clear about that. Not you and me be clear about that, but sometimes people think that I just started the book and became a believer in my research. No, this is a chronicling of my spiritual journey from skeptic to believer. And what happened is a couple of high school slash grade school friends I was having dinner with who are skeptics challenged me. One of them said he didn't understand how any rational person could be a Christian. And then within a few days of that, my publisher asked me to write a book on this very subject. And I thought this could be too big of a... The proximity of events was too close for me to not to wonder whether providential promptings weren't going on. So after some initial skepticism about my ability to do it, since I'm not formally trained, I decided to do it because perhaps I could reach people that the formally trained person couldn't.
Well stated, and I'm sure that is the case. David Limbaugh, my understanding is you draw from historical and the cultural evidence of the time when Jesus was here on earth, and you conclude that these things add up. But tell us about that process. That looking at this through the lenses that an attorney uses, that's a pretty rigorous process. Tell us about that.
Well, my doubt was based on largely on the idea of evil and suffering in the world and how an all-loving and all-powerful God would permit that kind of suffering. I didn't understand that. That just didn't make sense to me, nor did the idea that God would base his salvation scheme on what we believe. I mean, I couldn't quite understand that. But the problem is I didn't really understand the Christian theology and what everything was about. So I started studying it instead of relying on what other people had told me about what the Bible said. I started studying it myself, studying theology, studying Christian apologetics, which is the defense of the faith. And finally, determined that what the Bible says is true, that the Bible comes down to us as originally written. It has been subjected to rigorous tests by textual critics and has found more reliable than any other ancient document. And that alone wouldn't prove anything until you look at the reliability of the writers. And the writers were 9 New Testament witnesses alone who are largely eyewitnesses. I mean, writers who are largely eyewitnesses, are close associates. They were committed to accuracy. Their lives were changed as a result of seeing Jesus, not just based on an ideology or a theology. They formed their belief and solidified their belief after they saw him in his resurrection body, and they became bold proclaimers of the gospel. They would never have done that, especially not in the hot bed of where this all happened, Jerusalem, preached the gospel there, if they knew what they were saying was a lie. So they knew it was true because they saw him. And then, of course, I was exposed to the messianic prophecy where Jesus was his very birthplace. Bethlehem was predicted by the prophet Micah 5:2. Specifics about his life, death, and resurrection were predicted throughout the Old Testament, especially in Psalms 22 and Isaiah 53. Saw all those things and couldn't deny the supernatural intervention of God in his living word, and then accepted it as his living word and his inspired word, and looked at Christianity from a whole different perspective.
David Limbaugh, author of a new book. It's entitled Jesus on Trial. He is a lawyer by profession, New York Times bestselling author, and also an editorial columnist. He's on our guest line here on the Faith Radio Network. David, let's look just at the four Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Now, as I read them, as I've studied them, and I'm sure you came up with this conclusion, that there's great consistency. Those are not the same books, obviously, but there's great consistency in what each of the authors of those books were saying about Jesus. What do you say to the skeptic who says, well, come on, Limbaugh, listen, you know, these things have been edited, they've been revised, they've been translated into multiple languages. People down through the centuries have tweaked them so the consistency is there. We don't necessarily know that they were consistent back at their origins. How do you respond to that kind of criticism?
I say that's exactly wrong. We do know, because we have 25,000 copies of the New Testament, infinitely more than we have of any other ancient document that we routinely accept as reliable. The time between the original writing, the gap between the original writing and the events that they write about, that is Jesus' death and the time they originally wrote, was a very short period of time. The gap between the time they were originally written and the first extant manuscripts existed was dramatically shorter than for any other ancient book. For example, most of Caesar's writings, Julius Caesar, the Gallic Wars, for example, the oldest manuscript we have, the most recent, I should say, no, the oldest, is 1,000 years away from the events that he wrote about. The gospel, we have fragments of New Testament writings within a generation, part of the chapter of John, five verses of a chapter of John, within a generation of when John wrote it. We have an entire New Testament manuscript and most of the Old Testament within 250 years of when it was written. And as I said, the fact that we have all these copies has enabled secular textual critics to look at them all and compare and determine that more than 99% accuracy from how they were originally written. And as to those minor variants that do exist, they're all largely insignificant typo kind of things or synonyms, but nothing that affects substantive doctrine or even the substantive meaning of the text. So no, as a factual matter, we have the text that was originally written by these nine gospel writers. Yes, nine New Testament writers, I should say.
Yep. David Limbaugh, author of the book Jesus on Trial. David, stand by. Hold over, if you would. I've got a couple more questions for you. 617, it's the Faith Radio Network. We'll continue with David Limbaugh in just moments. I'm Austin Hill. We're glad you're with us. Wednesday morning underway. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network, and I'm Austin Hill. David Limbaugh, my guest, his brand new book is called Jesus on Trial. David Limbaugh, an attorney by profession, former law professor. He has put the scriptures, the gospels in particular, through legal scrutiny and says that it all adds up. The gospels are true. David, let me approach you with a scenario that I'm sure you faced many, many times before. So have I, probably a lot of our listeners have as well. And that is the scenario of an individual who says, hey, David, that's fine. You believe in Jesus. That's good for you. That works for you. You do that Jesus thing. But there are lots of different ways to God. There are lots of different pathways to heaven, to eternity. And everybody is kind of on their own journey. And we can go about these things however we so choose. It seems to me that if we take the claims of Christ seriously, there is some sense in which, to use a modern-day vernacular term, they are kind of exclusionary, or at least exclusive. Jesus said, I am the way, and didn't leave a whole lot of options there. How do you respond to that? I'm sure you've heard that before. How do you respond to it?
Yeah, in fact, I respond to it in the book. I think this is a pernicious idea that has been perpetrated on the culture that all roads lead to the same place, but just by different paths. And all roads lead to God. In fact, if Jesus is truly God, and if he said what the Bible records that he says, that's a lie. That is to say, Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. The only way to the Father is through me. That means you must have faith in Jesus Christ to find your way to God for eternal salvation. You must put your trust in Christ. Now, it is exclusive in the sense that Jesus, not us, not Christians, Jesus said it. We are passing on what he said as an act of love, not as an act of intolerance.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not exclusive in the sense that everyone's invited in. Jesus wants everyone to believe. It is my view. Maybe not everyone believes that. I do believe that he wants everyone to believe, and it's their choice whether they do or not. So it's not exclusive. But all other religions, most other religions have exclusive truth claims too. Otherwise, they would, if they didn't have any problem with it, then why won't they just become Christian? No, they Buddhists separated from Hindus because they don't agree on everything. Muslims don't accept that Christ is a prophet. A god. They are not a god, God. And so we have all kinds of different religions out there, contrary to popular opinion, popular belief, or the cultural narrative, that also have exclusive claims. But there's nothing, I think there's nothing unloving about the fact that Jesus says that he is the way, and we better pay attention to it. A lot of people died if he, believing that, and if Jesus were not the only way, I dare say he wouldn't have become man and died on the cross for our sins, because it would have been unnecessary. And it's preposterous to believe that a God would have made himself man and suffered the indignities that human beings suffer, and far worse, by accepting separation from the Father and taking all the wrath of the Father for the past, present, future sins of mankind. If he didn't have to do it, it would have been a futile act. Nobody would have subjected themselves to that for no reason.
David Limbaugh, he is a nationally syndicated editorial columnist, New York Times best-selling author, and now he's out with a new book, Jesus on Trial, A Lawyer Affirms the Truth of the Gospel. David, as always, thanks very much for joining us. Good to speak with you. I want to run out and grab a copy myself. I look forward to talking again soon, and thanks for being here today.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. I'm getting really good reviews, even from the theologians, seminary professors that I've given it to. And I would appreciate it if you'd read it and tell me what you think. I'm sorry you didn't have a review copy, but thanks for the nice interview.
We will be back in touch, and we'll follow up on that. David, thanks very much.
Thank you.
It's the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Glad you're with us. Our program continues momentarily. On the Faith Radio Network. Good morning. Welcome to Wednesday. Thank you for being here. Still to come, we've got a great friend, Bill English from BibleandBusiness.com, joining us in just a little over half an hour. Some very interesting insights about the current economic climate that we're in. We'll talk about that. Connecting Faith happens weekdays at 12 noon Central Time here on the Faith Radio Network. Yesterday, host Neil Stavem spoke with Molly Wall of Operation World. They talked about the future of the global church and what that future might look like. Here's part of that discussion.
We don't have a lot of geographic knowledge, I think, particularly for today's high school students and average American. I'm assuming probably that the Christian population isn't much better informed about the people and places of the world. What's your assessment is in maybe why something like Operation World is so important in this aspect?
Sure. Well, I think, and maybe as an American I can say this gingerly, but I think that the real dominance of American culture around the globe in a lot of ways does make it difficult sometimes for Americans to understand or maybe even to notice other cultures and nations without making a significant effort to do so. And certainly everyone in every country is ethnocentric in that regard, you know, focused on their own area. But I do think it's often takes some effort to really look at what's going on around the world. And I think one thing that Operation World does for Americans, but for anybody from any part of the world, and we do have people following along and praying along from over 40 or 50 countries usually, and I think it provides a way to unify believers, and to give us a unified set of information and an understanding of the church in the various countries, but also a way to unite in prayer for those peoples and those countries.
So how could we pray differently than, I guess we maybe kind of addressed a little bit, but give us some examples of what maybe specific things we could be praying for if we were utilizing a resource like Operation World.
Right. Well, I think people use it different ways. It's if you grab a copy, or even if you just go to the website and have a look, you can go country by country and get a little snapshot of the political or economic situation there, but then some specific points to pray for. And we've got a calendar set up in the front of the book, and it's what we follow on our Facebook page or on our website. And it provides a way for someone to pray through the world in a year, or even if you don't have time to do it every day, to once a week pick the country of the day for that day and pick a prayer point and pray for that along with the daily calendar.
What's the website? Is it operationworld.org or .com?
That's it, yep.
Operationworld.org. So you could find a prayer calendar there, or some daily some tips there as well.
Yeah, I think you can sign up for an email also that'll feed you every day a link to the prayer point for that day.
That's Connecting Faith with Neil Statham and his guest Molly Wall of Operation World. That was from yesterday's broadcast. Coming up today at 12 noon Central Time, Neil speaks with Mary Wongren. They'll talk about raising awareness of mental issues like autism, ADHD, and bipolar disorder. That's today, 12 noon Central Time, Connecting Faith with Neil Statham here on the Faith Radio Network. Good morning. It's now 6:30. You're listening to Faith Radio. I'm Austin Hill. Still to come, pastors, get ready. Have a game plan in place, legally speaking, should you face the threat of arrest. We'll talk to a legal expert about pastor arrests in America as we continue. SRN News on the way next.
Back to Austin Hill in the morning. Questions or comments for the show? You can leave them on our show page at myfaithradio.com.
Good morning. It's now 6:35. I'm Austin Hill. Glad you're with us. I'm here weekday morning 6 till 8 as we seek to connect faith to life. It is Pastor Appreciation Month, all month long during the month of October. And we'll talk about ways to show appreciation to the pastor of your church coming up later this morning. And also, just a reminder, navigate over to our homepage, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. And nominate the pastor of your church. We've got a beautiful retreat gift that we'll be giving away via a drawing coming up at the end of the month. But more details on that forthcoming here on our program. Well, the news broke early this week. A couple, their names are Don and Evelyn Knapp. They are ordained Christian pastors. They also own a wedding chapel, for-profit business in, of all places, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, a beautiful, smallish kind of resort community in northern Idaho. And the news broke earlier this week that they may very well run afoul of a city ordinance in Coeur d'Alene that says that they could be arrested and fined quite severely if they don't perform same-sex weddings. Where do we go from here? This can happen in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Can it happen elsewhere? Joining us to talk about this for some legal analysis, Alex Kincaid. She is a former prosecutor. She now operates a private law practice where she assists families and individuals and Christian business owners on how to protect themselves from pressures that may otherwise force them to compromise their Christian values. Alex Kincaid, welcome to Faith Radio. Thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, Austin. Thanks for having me.
Great to be with you. Give us your assessment. You're in the southern region of Idaho in the Boise area. Coeur d'Alene is a few hundred miles north of you, but this is your state, a state that you know and love. Give us your assessment of what has transpired in Coeur d'Alene and where things stand with this couple, this married couple who are both ordained ministers.
Sure, Austin. And yes, I'm a ways away from Coeur d'Alene now, but I actually grew up in northern Idaho. I'm very familiar with the territory. This is pretty shocking to people in this state. The majority of people who believe that marriage is a sacred covenant between a man and a woman, and there is a 63-page complaint that has been filed by the Knapps against the city of Coeur d'Alene that outlines, you know, their history in this state in performing marriages in accordance with their religious beliefs. And now we have the government stepping in telling them, you're actually going to have to do it our way or be subject to these fines and possible jail time each and every day that you fail to do it.
Now, city officials in Coeur d'Alene will say, hey, listen, we didn't come after them. They came after us. As a matter of fact, I know there's a city council member there in Coeur d'Alene who's saying this is a passive law, not an active law. I don't know if that's a legitimate legal distinction from your vantage point or not, but they're saying one would need to go to the Knapps business, ask to get married, a same-sex couple, be rejected, and then that same-sex couple would need to go to the city and officially file a complaint before the city of Coeur d'Alene would do anything with the Knapps. Their whole spin is that Mr. and Mrs. Knapp, yes, they're ordained ministers, but they're really just kind of cooking this up and making something out of nothing. What does that look like from your vantage point as a legal professional?
Right. A couple of problems with that, Austin. First of all, this city ordinance was recently passed. So, you know, we have a lot of old laws on the books that probably need to be done away with. We get rid of them because times have changed and maybe we're not going to enforce them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
This is a recent law. They certainly intend to enforce it or they wouldn't have just passed it. And the Knapps should not be subject to possible jail time and fines for violating the law before they can bring this lawsuit. So essentially, you know, the city's trying to say, look, we're not actually enforcing this. This is all a bunch of smoke. They're coming after us. No, the city already came after them when they passed this ordinance to begin with. And if the Knapps now refuse to marry same-sex couples, they can be fined and jailed each and every day. They're subject to a new penalty. And you know how long it takes to move something through the court system. So think about as they continue to reject and somebody actually gets injured,
right.
Now they're subject to these penalties if the court enforces this ordinance.
Well, I think you know the machinations of courts better than I do, for sure. But my impression is they move very slowly, and I think that's the point you're making here. Alex Kincaid, she is a former prosecutor, now a private practice attorney in the state of Idaho, and she assists Christian individuals and families and businesses on how to secure themselves, protect themselves from government pressures that may try to force them to compromise their Christian values and beliefs. Where do you see this going with Don and Evelyn Knapp? I know they have secured representation from this very high-profile nonprofit law firm, the Alliance Defending Freedom, and they're very high-profile in the evangelical Christian community. I know you're familiar with them. ADF has filed a lawsuit and asked for a restraining order, actually, to tell the city of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, hey, back off, leave these two ordained ministers alone. I don't know the latest on that, but how does this play out in your estimation?
I think the Knapps are going to be successful in at least getting the temporary restraining order. It's hard to predict how our government's going to act because we're dealing with out-of-control government and abuse of power, and we're seeing that in the court system the same as we're seeing it in other branches of government. So, you know, I want to hope that the courts are going to protect the Knapps and allow them to practice their religion and marry people in the way that is consistent with their religious beliefs and not force them to violate their vows by marrying same-sex couples. But, you know, it's concerning, and this can go through various layers of court. They filed this in the first layer, as you have to do in the federal court system, and if they lose, then there will be an appeal. We could see this go up to the Supreme Court. Who knows? And, yes, the system moves very slowly. So, you know, it's very concerning, Austin.
It certainly is to me, and there are a lot of pastors and lay people in churches that are listening to us right now, Alex Kincaid, and saying, my goodness, is my pastor going to be next? I mean, who would have thought that evangelical Christian pastors in, of all places, Houston, Texas, back about a month ago. Some people call that the buckle of the Bible Belt. I don't know if that's the buckle or, you know, something else. But people look at Houston, Texas and say, well, this is kind of evangelical Christian central. And yet there was the city government carrying out an inquisition of sorts, saying, you hand over transcripts of your sermons or face arrest. Now this in Coeur d'Alene. Take a step back, if you would, for us, Alex. And speak to the pastor, the concerned church member who is saying, I don't know what's coming next with my church, with my ministry, and my city government. What advice would you offer? What analysis would you give us?
Well, I think that, you know, the Houston thing is a little different, number one, in that what makes it really scary in that situation is that those pastors, as I understand it, aren't even parties to that lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
So they're being brought into this, and the reaction that I've heard is that they're saying no. You know, this is so similar to, you know, Christians having been persecuted throughout the ages for adhering to their religious beliefs, and I think our pastors and our Christians are going to stand strong and not give in to these government demands and fight it. And, you know, as we bond together and fight this type of government action and hold strong to our convictions, pastors are ready to do that. And they will hold to their faith. They will seek the right legal advice. Certainly there are organizations out there, such as the law firm that you mentioned, that has filed this suit in Coeur d'Alene that are going to come to their aid and protect them from the government.
All right, Alex Kincaid, stand by. Quick break. A couple more questions for you. We'll continue in just a moment. Alex Kincaid, a former prosecutor, she now represents and serves individuals and families and businesses and educates people on how to protect themselves from pressures, legal pressures that may otherwise try to get them to compromise their Christian values. We'll talk more with her in just a moment. 6:45, this is the Faith Radio Network that you're listening to. I'm Austin Hill. Don't go away. On the Faith Radio Network. Good morning. Welcome. Wednesday underway, and I'm Austin Hill. Weekday mornings 6 till 8. Still to come, our great friend Bill English with BibleAndBusiness.com. Very interesting and conflicting reports published in our country over the last 3 or 4 weeks or so about the current state of the economy and how good are things right now, really, and what does it mean for employment and job creation and those kinds of things. We'll get to that with Bill English coming up at after the news at the top of the hour. And also, we need to have a very serious and thoughtful conversation about toxic workplaces. Dr. Paul White, who's been with us before recently, Dr. Paul White will be on our line in a little less than an hour from now to talk about his latest book and discuss ways in which we can be positive influences for Christ, if you will, in a workplace that may be very, very toxic. All that and more just ahead here on our program today. It's Pastor Appreciation Month all throughout the month of October. I find it the height of irony, and I don't mean that in a ha-ha, gee, that's funny kind of way. It's ironic in a very sobering way that here in the same month that we're celebrating Pastor Appreciation Month, we have pastors being threatened with arrest here in the United States of America. I hope it's a wake-up call to all of us. Alex Kincaid is on our guest line. She is a former prosecutor, now a private practice attorney. She's in the state of Idaho, where a husband and wife, who are both ordained pastors, are being threatened with arrest in the city of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Alex, you advise people in attorney-client relationships all the time. That's what you do. You can't practice law here on the program, but speak, if you would, just before we let you go, speak to the person, the lay person, and a church, or maybe somebody who serves on an elder board at a church, who looks at this activity and says, my goodness, I hope this doesn't happen to my pastor. And they don't want to live in this little bubble that says, oh, it'll never happen here. How do we begin a conversation? How does that person begin a conversation about appropriate, proactive legal protective measures in the church? What does that person do? Do they go and talk to the pastor? Do they talk to the elder board? Do they convene a meeting? What do you recommend in that situation?
Well, I think, you know, it's like with anything else. The more you need to have the conversation, you need to start it somehow. And if it's with your board, or if you're a smaller church and you just get together as a group with the leaders within the church, it's important to sit down and talk about it. What are your policies going to be? And if something like this happens in your community, if there is a law passed in a local situation by your city, what are you going to do? Are you going to give in until it's sorted out elsewhere in the court system, or are you going to hold strong? And if your answer is that you're going to hold strong, you need to have a plan for what happens next. So what is the reaction going to be? Who is your lawyer going to be? Who is your advisor in terms of the legal community? And how are you going to gather the funds to defend yourself if you don't have a nonprofit legal organization that's going to take up the case for you?
Yeah. And for those of us who maybe see that local authorities, local elected bodies are moving towards passing an ordinance or a new law, and they say, well, no, this is all about non-discrimination, this is about diversity, this is about inclusiveness. I mean, that's the way these kinds of laws are positioned. And yet the people who do get discriminated against, who do get excluded, not included, are oftentimes the Christians. If we see something like that on the horizon in our state legislature, in the city, in the county, or whatever, how should we engage in that conversation with elected officials, would you say?
I think you need to go in strong. You certainly need to show up to the city council meetings where these proposals are being discussed. You need to testify. You need to be there in numbers and in force so that they know if they pass this kind of a law, they are going to have a fight on their hands. This is costly to the city as well. It works on both sides that way. So if you show up and you're strong and you let them know there will be opposition and that you are willing to fight this, you're not just going to fall over and comply, that should have some effect.
Alex Kincaid, she is a former prosecutor and a private practice attorney. We'll have info about her on our website at myfaithradio.com. Alex, thanks very much for your time. I know it's very early there in your home state of Idaho. Thanks for the update on the Coeur d'Alene case. We look forward to speaking with you again soon. And thanks for your wisdom and your insight. We appreciate what you do.
My pleasure, Austin. Thanks for having me.
And this is the Faith Radio Network. Glad you're here. Pastor Appreciation Month continues. Tell you more about ways that you can show appreciation to your pastor, and I'll let you in on some things that other people are saying about their pastor. It's pretty cool. We'll talk about it next. It's the Faith Radio Network. Radio Network. Live the Promise with Susie Larson happens every weekday afternoon, 3 till 5 p.m. Central Time. Yesterday, author and speaker Liz Curtis Higgs joined Susie on the program. They talked about the darkness of today's culture. Let's listen in.
During this time of year, when darkness just seems to be celebrated, and I think part of why you see all of these TV shows and movies that are just so horrifically demonic. But to me, it speaks to the people are really searching, because the fact that they're so interested in that spiritual realm, when you get past the fact, the horror of it, it's like there are people who are deeply searching, aren't there?
Deeply searching. In my youth, I was so attracted to the occult. I, you know, always wanted to play with a Ouija board, or I wanted to I remember looking for a roommate when I was, well, let's see, about 19 years old, looking for a roommate. And I stopped by a girl's apartment, and there was something about it that wasn't quite right. And I wasn't a believer. I was lost could be. Even I knew something was wrong with that apartment. And I finally said to her, what is it you do exactly? She said, oh, I'm a witch. And I said, really? She said, oh, yes. Even then, God was intervening for me, even though I did not know him. He certainly knew me. And he was stirring inside me enough to make even me, bad girl, step back and go, wow, okay, I'm not willing to go there. But those things do have appeal. And they're made to look very appealing. They're full of light and color and excitement and music and spectacle and all of that. Or even if they're the opposite, if they're dark and mysterious and spooky, all those things have great appeal. But you know what? They appeal to the flesh, not the spirit. Mm-hmm. And if we'll listen to the Spirit, the Holy Spirit will keep us out of that stuff for sure. A wise man fears the Lord and shuns evil. That's Proverbs 14:16. And I'm all about the positive. You know me. So I think one of the things we do is we look for what, positively speaking, October is. First of all, it is my favorite month of the year because it is so spectacularly beautiful. Mm-hmm. At least here in the northern hemisphere, you know, where we get all of our trees changing, and we just had our biggest weekend this past weekend. Today, of course, rain, and all the leaves are coming down, and we're looking at November. But the beauty of October and the glories of God's creation, I don't think are ever more evident. Every tree is like a paintbrush. The sky is a blue that it never is any other month of the year. I think it's opportunities to do some really powerful and positive things to direct our attention away from the witches and the ghosts and the goblins and all the dark things. So that's the first thing, I think, is to look what's positive about the month for your family and for yourself.
Well, and I personally like the changing of the color of the leaves on the trees in my front yard, actually. That's Liz Curtis-Higgs, author and speaker on Live the Promise with Susie Larson just yesterday. Now, coming up on today's episode of her program, Susie welcomes Randy Alcorn to the program. He'll offer help on understanding God's sovereignty over creation. Randy Alcorn joining Susie Larson for Live the Promise, coming up this afternoon, 3 till 5 p.m. Central Time, as always, Monday through Friday, here on the Faith Radio Network. It's 6:56. We're glad you're with us, and thank you for being here. It's still Pastor Appreciation Month. A few days left to get your pastor nominated to win a really, really just wonderful gift that we'll do a drawing at the end of the month, and a pastor and the pastor's family will be sent on an 8-day retreat experience with our friends at Sunscape Retreat. Sunscape, of course, a nonprofit organization that custom tailors retreat experiences at one of their two retreat facilities, very specifically to the needs and the interests and the preferences of people who serve in ministry, pastors and those who serve parachurch ministry organizations as well. So get over to our website, myfaithradio.com, myfaithradio.com. Just log on. You can do it from your phone as well. Nominate your pastor, and the drawing will be coming up at the end of October. But we'll talk more about that, give you some more insight about Pastor Appreciation Month coming up next hour into the 7 a.m. hour here on the Faith Radio Network. Also, our great friend Bill English from BibleAndBusiness.com along the way in just minutes. Conflicting reports have been produced by different organizations and individuals over the last three and a half weeks or so. Some reports saying, hey, the economy is terrific, go out and shop, 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 buy, buy, buy. And yet a survey of small business owners around the country saying, you know, it's not so terrific, and we're being very, very cautious. No one's saying it's panic time, it's crisis time, it's recession time. But there is a certainly a current underfoot to try to get us all to buy and to spend. And one has to wonder how wise, how prudent is that? We'll talk about that and more with Bill English coming up after the news. Also, rising above a toxic workplace. Expert Dr. Paul White joins us at 7:35. It's now 6:58. I'm Austin Hill. Glad you're with us. SRN News is next.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
And here's hoping your day is off to a great start. It's now 7:04 Central Time. And this is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill, honored to be with you weekday morning 6 till 8 as we seek to connect faith to life. Coming up in just about half an hour from now, we welcome back to our program Dr. Paul White. He is a clinical psychologist and also a consultant. He's written a very intriguing book about surviving in a toxic workplace. Raise your hand if you think you have some, maybe just kind of little bit remote idea of what a toxic workplace is. Yep, that's what I thought. Most of us have been there and we have done that. I hope you can say that you're not in a toxic workplace right now, but even if you are in a situation where things are awkward and uncomfortable, maybe even there's inappropriate behavior going on in the workplace, Dr. Paul White, always great for some advice with that. So he comes up at about 7:35 this morning. Pastor Appreciation Month rolls on. We'll talk more about ways in which we can continue to appreciate our pastors even after the month of October is over with. You know, we don't just have to block out 30 days on the calendar and say, well, we'll be nice here in these 4 weeks and then forget about it the rest of the time. You know, it's hopefully something that continues. But we'll talk about that and also the very latest on the threat of arrests of pastors in our country. That seems to, in the case of Houston, Texas, and the town of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, those threats seem to have dissipated just a little bit. And that's a good thing. So let's not, you know, be naive and just all go back to sleep and forget or pretend that it could never happen again. It most certainly could. We'll talk about that a little bit later this hour. Now, right here, right now, on this very day, there are, if you go searching online, you can find conflicting reports about the present state of the economy. And how does it look for local small business owners around the country? And are they going to be hiring? Or is business so good that they'll be creating more jobs, bringing on more staff? There's also a report out yesterday that grabbed a lot of national headline news saying, oh, optimism in the economy across America has never been so high since October of 2007. Americans feel great. Everything's terrific. The sky is blue, and it's onward and upward. I don't think that things are nearly as pessimistic as some would believe, and they're certainly not as perfect as others would have us believe. We'll check in with our good friend Bill English from BibleAndBusiness.com and get his perspective. And by the way, this is an election year. What does all this small business stuff mean for us as we fulfill our responsibility of voting? We'll talk about that coming up next. 7:07 on the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Don't go anywhere. On this, the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill here weekday morning 6 till 8 as we seek to connect faith to life. Honored to be with you. Thank you for listening. And thank you for being a supporter of ours. If you are, come on board anytime at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. So what is our role as individual private persons, private citizens? What is our role in shaping and creating, really, the rules that our culture and our society are governed by? You know, we've been airing a lot of very thoughtful and well-written very well-messaged remarks from some very high-profile people, Pastor Tony Evans being one of them, Pastor Chip Ingram, Pastor Chuck Swindoll, others. We had a lot of our most esteemed and most high-profile pastors in America recording these announcements for the Faith Radio Network saying, we have a responsibility. It lies in the biblical concept of stewardship. We have a responsibility to participate in elections. I really appreciated what Chip Ingram and Pastor Tony Evans were saying. Not only were they saying go and vote, but and I'll just paraphrase it, but they're very politely saying figure out what is on the ballot and who the people are that you're voting for. Chip Ingram has done this very lengthy and thoughtful sermon series on this issue of understanding what the public policy issues are in our country. I hear a good bit of Chip Ingram's program every day. His program airs the final half hour between 5:30 and 6, right before we begin this show at 6 a.m. Central Time. So we have some very thoughtful Christian leaders in the church saying it is a duty, it is a responsibility, this matters, and it's foolish to think otherwise. What is our duty and our responsibility with public policy decisions as we vote and as we let our voice be heard to elected officials as they pertain to business? We all know that small business is preeminently important in our society. We rely on small businesses for products and services. We rely on them for employment opportunities in our communities. They really do matter in a profound way. And yet, as voters, as citizens, we have a say in the rules that will govern and either encourage growth of small business or discourage and ultimately lead to collapse of small business. Joining us to talk about this all-important issue, our good friend Bill English from BibleAndBusiness.com. He has been sifting through conflicting reports about how good the economy really is for small business owners right now. He's got some thoughts on the input that we can all have. Bill, welcome back to the program. Good to talk to you this morning.
Hey, good to talk with you. How are you doing today?
Doing good. What do you make of the conflicting news out? A publication, nonprofit group in New York City just yesterday published this report. It got repeated all over the dominant media yesterday and last night, saying, wow, people's confidence in the economy has never been so high since October 2007. Happy days are here again. Go out and shop, 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 buy, buy, buy over the Christmas holiday season. Stimulate the economy. Everything's good. And then we have this report from the National Federation of Independent Business Owners saying, you know, we're just being a little more cautious and we're not going to be spending so much money. Business owners are more cautious. Others are trying to get consumers to not be cautious. What's your take on this?
Well, it's two different surveys for two different groups, right? The Conference Board Consumer Confidence Index is for the consumers, and the NFIB is for small business owners. When you dig into the details of both of the, well, first of all, let's go to the Conference Board Consumer Confidence Index. Mm-hmm. It was the expectation. It was a sub measurement within that overall report. It was called the Expectations Index. That increased from 86.4% in September to 95.0% to October. And that's the part that's being hyped in the media today. But if you dig into the numbers, what you're going to find is that within the report itself, there is ambivalence and somewhat contradictory reports. So, for example, those expecting business conditions, and this is consumers now, those expecting business conditions to worsen did fall, but there was also a moderate increase in those who expected business conditions to worsen as well. So they took that same scale and they found that a portion of the consumers thought it would get better, but there was another portion who thought it would get worse. The big disconnect between the two surveys has to do with job creation. Consumers are expecting a lot of jobs to be created here in the next few months, and that's what's leading to their optimism. Mm-hmm. Whereas from the Small Business Index, what we're seeing there is that small business owners are actually scaling back on the number of jobs they plan to create or to open up, in part because they're having a hard time filling the current openings that they already have. So there's very much a mixed bag here.
Very much a mixed bag. Bill English from BibleAndBusiness.com. He's with us on our guest line here on the Faith Radio Network. I get the fact that one survey, there's one geared towards consumers, surveying consumer sentiment among consumers, and the other from the National Federation of Independent Business, surveying the perceptions of business owners. Two different surveys, two different audiences, but they're dealing with and working in pretty much the same economy. And to me, the fact that business owners and consumers would be seeing things so differently is a reminder that the plights of the business owner in our local community is oftentimes something that we just don't see, those of us who don't own businesses. They really do matter. We've talked about a bunch how businesses matter to the life of the church even. When we come back, let's continue with Bill English and talk about us average everyday folks who maybe don't own a company, won't own a company, but we care. And we want to make good choices that will actually bring about some of that employment and some of that hiring, some of those new job opportunities that so many of us want to see happen. Bill English, VitalInBusiness.com. He continues with us momentarily. It's 7:15. I'm Austin Hill. This is Faith Radio. Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Bill English with BibleAndBusiness.com. No stranger here. Great friend to us here at Faith Radio and to you and our other listeners. He's with us on the guest line as we try to ascertain some sort of objectivity about the present state of the economy and what that might mean for our ability to make a living and provide for our families and to be charitable with our communities and with our church and to be generous during the Christmas gift-giving season. All these kinds of things, they rest on our ability to make a living. They rest on the foundation of a functional economy. Bill, I want to circle around here and get back to this issue that it's an election cycle that we're in right now. Big election coming up just days away. We've got some very thoughtful pastors around the country, very high-profile pastors with national platforms saying Christians need to get informed about who's on the ballot, what the initiatives are, and exercise good discernment in voting. How does one bear in mind the unique needs of job creators, the real entrepreneurs in our midst, when we go to vote and make choices with our laws and our public policy?
Well, look, you have a number of politicians out there who offer the idea that if you hurt the employer, you somehow help the employee. And that just isn't true. You don't help the employee by hurting the employer. So when you go to vote, you need to vote for folks who I think support biblical ideas about God's purposes for business. And in my mind, God has four purposes for business: to create products that enable the community to flourish, to allow a place where people can express their God-given passions and creativities, to create profits, which provide sustainability, and to engage in philanthropy, which helps the overall community. To the extent that you hurt business, to that extent you impair God's purposes for business. Voting for people who want to hurt business rather than help it is, in my mind, an unrighteous vote.
I would agree with that. How does one, in your view, Bill English, discern whether a particular proposal or a particular promise or idea is helping or hurting businesses? I mean, I don't know many candidates for public office, Republican, Democrat, doesn't matter. I don't know very many. I don't observe very many who say, you know, I'm not a job creator. I don't care about small business. Pretty much they universally all say, I'm a job creator, I support local businesses, but some policies that public officials offer are very destructive. They may be very well intended, but they don't create jobs. They, in some cases, create the forfeiture or closure of a business. How do we discern helping from hurting in that regard?
Well, you know, Mrs. Clinton recently said that that businesses don't create jobs. So I think there's a precedent there for that.
Sure.
How do we know? Sure. First of all, I would love to have a politician stand up and say, I don't create jobs, because politicians don't create jobs. It's only businesses and others that actually do. So what you have to do is to look at the policy and decide whether it's going to help or hurt. But frankly, most of the politicians just tell us straight out. They will say, because most politicians pit one group against another. I'm for you and I'm against them. Or, you know, this politician is against you and he's for the wrong people or something like that. Just look at how they're dividing the country. And if they're dividing it against business, then you can pretty much know that they're not the ones that we should have in office.
Further thoughts on how to be discerning at this time of the year? We're heading into, we're well into the fourth quarter, but we're heading into what is customarily the Christmas holiday shopping season. And a lot of Christians, myself included, get skittish even just hearing that rhetoric, it seems to take so much focus off what Christmas and the Advent season is really supposed to be about. And yet at the same time, our economy, unfortunately, is stuck in this mode where we're reliant on retailers doing really, really well at this time of the year. How do we navigate that terrain as thoughtful Christians and business people?
You know, just a couple of quick thoughts here. Number one, ask God how you should spend your money this Christmas and follow what he tells you. I honestly believe that God talks to us and that he will tell you how to spend the money. Number two, wouldn't it be interesting, Austin, if we had an entire evangelical community who took Christmas off, essentially, and took whatever monies that they were going to spend on gifts, and they gave it to the poor? What would happen in America if the evangelical church nationwide decided we're not going to give gifts to each other in our nice, comfortable suburban homes or wherever it is that we live? Instead, we're going to take the money that we would have spent on gifts at Christmas and we're going to give it to the poor to help alleviate poverty and distress and hurting in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
What could God do through that? Just talking it out there.
Sure. No, a great suggestion. And there are those, perhaps yourself, and I know even in my church where my family and I worship Bill English, this is a very active thing. But Operation Christmas Child is one such initiative that gets funded with a lot of Christians here in the United States who very proactively make that choice that you're deciding. Maybe they don't give up all Christmas gift giving, but they do forego some of their own personal money and say, we're going to do a turn for suffering people abroad. It sounds like you're suggesting that we could really turn things upside down in a positive way if we did that for people in our local communities as well.
You know, is there anybody within the sound of our voices who doesn't already have what they need? Really? I mean, there might be a few people out there, and to those people, you know, we offer our prayers and support, and we know that God will meet their need. But there, for the vast majority of the people listening to this show right now, there isn't anything that they need that they don't already have. So we're going to go to the mall and we're going to buy more toys and more trinkets and more things to give to people that we love,
right,
who already don't need them. So I'm just suggesting that we take some of our Christmas giving and we give it away to the poor.
Bill English from BibleAndBusiness.com. That's where you can find him. He's traveling today, actually. We've got him on our guest line. And I won't say where, but I'll just put it this way. He's in a time zone where it's really, 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 really early right now. So, Bill, thanks for getting up early with us today.
You bet. Thanks. But have a good day.
Was that sufficiently ambiguous? I hope so.
Yeah, I'm in San Francisco. It's a wonderful place.
Bill, thanks so much. Good to talk to you. 7:25, it's the Faith Radio Network. I wasn't going to say it, but he's free to. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill.
News you can use. Connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
This is the Faith Radio Network. Thank you for being here. I am Austin Hill here weekday morning 6 till 8 as we seek to connect faith to life right here at the beginning of your day. It is Pastor Appreciation Month. We're honoring that, acknowledging that, celebrating that throughout the month of October. And some more details about that coming up towards the top of the hour here on the Faith Radio Network. Do you work in a toxic environment? We were talking earlier this morning about the spread of the Ebola virus, and our great friend Dr. David Stevens, MD, from the Christian Medical and Dental Association, I don't think he could have been more clear. He said, you know, the greatest epidemic here in the U.S. is fear. We're probably not going to see an outbreak of the Ebola virus in any large-scale sort of fashion here on the North American continent. But if we think of toxicity of a different sort, probably a lot of us would say, yes, I've been in a toxic workplace. I work in one now, or I used to work in one. It's not pleasant at all. How can you rise above that? And do we have options if we find ourselves in a toxic environment? Joining us to talk about the matter, Dr. Paul White. He's a licensed clinical psychologist. He works with individuals, businesses, and families. Has for over 20 years. He's authored a book, Rising Above a Toxic Workplace. Dr. Paul White, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you. I'm glad to be here, Austin.
It's good to speak with you. Let's start with the diagnosis of a toxic workplace. How do you define that? How do we know if our workplace is really all that bad?
Well, that's almost always the first question. And, you know, functionally, a toxic workplace is a poisonous workplace. It's a poisonous environment that has a lot of negative elements in it that essentially is destructive to the people that work there. On our website, you know, I actually wrote the book with Dr. Gary Chapman, the author of The Five Love Languages, and then Harold Myra, who is the former CEO of Christianity Today, and we've created an online assessment tool that's called How Toxic Is Your Workplace, that at our website, appreciationatwork.com, people can go to and take that. There's a lot of characteristics, but one that I think really is practical for people is that there's just really a negative environment. I mean, there's a lot of complaining. There's sort of distortion of the truth, you know, anger, conflict, all that kind of stuff. And that's actually how we got to this, because in our book, The Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace, where we applied the five love languages to work relationships, as I've been speaking in training groups, I was just amazed that people would come up and say, you wouldn't believe how bad my workplace is or what a jerk my boss is, and just right. The negativity was sort of overwhelming us.
I can imagine people rushing up to the podium, you have no idea what you were describing here, it's me. Probably yeah. Those kinds of experiences.
Exactly, and I loved your sort of introduction, because one of the keys is we need to not have a victim mentality about this. We can make a difference, especially as Christians and followers of Christ, that we're one thing that we can do is clearly speak the truth in love. Unfortunately, a lot of the negative examples in our book, and probably the most negative ones, actually came from Christian ministries and workplaces, because lots of times as Christians, we either don't speak the truth, we sort of go around it and indirect, or we maybe speak it but not in love.
And I hear what you're saying there. By the way, Dr. Paul White's author of the book Rising Above a Toxic Workplace, he's on our guest line here on the Faith Radio Network. You know, I think at times in the church, sometimes we give lip service to speaking the truth in love, but in a workplace environment where you are threatened with possible termination or demotion or any of a number of other things, if you do dare speak the truth, that can be pretty scary, pretty risky business, can it not?
Well, it can. In one of the sections, we talk about toxic leaders and what characterizes toxic leaders, and they're worse than incompetent. They're really sort of evil people. I mean, they really are narcissistic and all about themselves. And so when you're dealing with a toxic leader, and it doesn't have to be at the top of the organization, it could be a supervisor or a manager, there is a sense that you have to protect yourself. So you need to do your job. You need to document things. And then you need to have somebody, some wise counsel that you can bounce your thoughts and feelings off of, because lots of times we get fogged. But, yeah, you have to be careful, because they will take you down if you're not careful, especially if something goes wrong in the workplace. They're going to find somebody else to pin it on.
Dr. White, are Christian workplaces, nonprofit Christian ministries, maybe even for-profit businesses where there is some sort of distinctly and explicitly Christian initiative at stake, are Christian workplaces sometimes worse than, shall we say, secular workplaces?
Well, I think they are sometimes. Not all the time, obviously, but sometimes they are, because in some workplaces they're very mission-focused about getting the goal and task done, and that's important. But sometimes we forget that we're working with people, and people are part of the team to get there. And we can get so focused on getting the task done that we wind up using people. In fact, I worked in a nonprofit organization that, you know, they just sort of used people up, and then you were out the door, and they brought somebody else in. And that's obviously not what we want our workplace to be like. But I guess one of the things I want to make sure and emphasize is, regardless of how bad it is, and sometimes you have to get out because it's just too bad,
yeah.
But even in the midst of that, you know, we can make a difference to the people we interact with daily of being gracious and kind, not reacting overly to negative situations, you know, showing sort of the love of Christ there. But Christian workplaces can be tough because we don't confront bad behavior. A lot of times we keep letting it go, and then it just multiplies and makes things worse.
Dr. Paul Weitz, he is the author of Rising Above a Toxic Workplace. Now, I should add here in a few moments, we will have a couple of copies of Dr. Weitz's book to give away. We'll do a drawing for that here in just a few moments. So stand by. We'll tell you when to call in and enter the drawing for this. Let me ask you about this, because I know this is a subject, Dr. White, that you and your co-authors address in the book. Essential tips for maintaining your sanity in a toxic work environment. In a moment, I want to ask you about, you know, how do we know if it's just time to leave and to move on? But assuming that we decide to tough it out, so to speak, we want to make this particular work situation, we want to make it functional, we want it to work out. Give us two or three pointers on how to survive in the midst of that toxicity.
Yeah, I think two main points. One is you need to take care of yourself. If you find yourself losing sleep, having physical problems, you're more and more irritable or depressed and withdrawn, and you're, you know, withdrawing from relationships, you're going the wrong way. So if you don't take care of yourself, we're adults mm-hmm. now, nobody else will. So we've got to, you know, make sure we get adequate rest. We, you know, take ourselves spiritually, physically, keep in touch with our family and friends. And I think that's the second point, is you need somebody in your life that you can bounce ideas and thoughts of and get sort of objective feedback and hopefully wisdom. Mm-hmm. Because in a toxic work environment, you start to get fogged, and you don't – it's like, you know, in a poisonous environment, you're not thinking clearly, and then you don't know what's – sort of reality-based and what's not, and you think, well, I guess every place does this. Well, not every place does abuse their employees verbally, and you need sort of a touchstone for somebody that can give you some reality-based feedback.
Very interesting. All right, we'll continue with Dr. White in just a moment. Again, we've got a couple of copies of his book to give away. We will do a drawing for that. 743, it's the Faith Radio Network. We'll continue with Dr. Paul White and give away those book copies. In just moments, I'm Austin Hill. Stay with us. Seven 45 on the Faith Radio Network. Good morning. It's Austin Hill in the morning that you're listening to. Glad you're with us. Dr. Paul White, he's a clinical psychologist. He consults to organizations and individuals around the country. And he has a book out. It's called Rising Above a Toxic Workplace. Now, tell you what, if you'd like to win one of two copies of this book, go ahead and give us a call right now. We'll enter your name into a drawing. We'll draw a winner after the top of the hour, after 8 o'clock. Here's our number. It's 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. The book is called Rising Above a Toxic Workplace. And that's from Dr. Paul Weitz and his associates, 877-933-2484. Give us a call right now, and we'll take entries into the drawing. We'll conduct that drawing after the top of the hour, 8 o'clock. Dr. Weitz, so we're in a job. It's difficult by objective measure. Some objective measure, it sure seems like it's a toxic environment. We want to make it work, but it just seems unworkable. How do we know it's time to leave, and how do we plan those steps to exit?
Yeah, Austin, I think there's two points about that. One is, one of the ways that we found that we can turn a toxic workplace around is to help it become more positive through communicating appreciation to the people we work with. And it's a bit counterintuitive, but if you actually start to communicate appreciation to either your supervisor or colleagues mm-hmm. that are really difficult, it often can soften that, and we know that most people don't feel valued in the workplace. And so we know that just saying words doesn't work for everybody. And so that's why we wrote the 5 languages of appreciation in the workplace, to help out with that. But I think the other deciding point is that you want to make sure that you don't put yourself in a desperate position by leaving. And it's so that you know, sometimes we're at our rope's end, but we don't have any options, and we really make bad decisions when we're desperate. And so if you're considering this, the thing you want to do is start making some plans, either getting your resume sort of up to date, maybe getting your skills improved a little bit, take some courses, so that when you need to pull the trigger, you have some options. But leaving just boom, sort of on the spur of the moment, typically doesn't work well, unless obviously it's just a very abusive situation where it's, it just shouldn't continue to put yourself in that.
And what do you say to that person who has maybe we can, you know, hindsight is so beneficial, but maybe as we look back, we think, okay, this individual should have taken proactive measures 6 months ago, a year ago, 2 years ago, but now they're at the point where they're saying, I just got to get out of here. What advice do you have to that person who needs to exit stage left and do it quickly?
Well, one of the things people can do is that, and I do career coaching for people, and that one is to have a sort of a stepping stone. You typically, if you're going to leave right away, you aren't going to move into another position that's really of equal responsibility and pay and all that. But you can at least take an interim position where it's going to pay the monthly bills. It may not meet everything that you need for retirement and all that, but that you can at least survive here for a while, the next 3 to 6 months or whatever it might be, while you look for that next career position. So don't always think that you have to move from a career position to the next career position. Sometimes you've got to have a little bit of a stepping stone transition in between that allows you the time to find a better position.
Dr. White, I'm curious to know what you would say about this. I've got to believe you probably encountered this before, but you have workers in perhaps a Christian organization, maybe it's a church, but some sort of parachurch ministry, and they're saying, wow, our workplace is toxic, this is an ugly situation, and the leadership is saying, no, it's not. We're a Christian organization. We all love the Lord. We're all here to serve the stated ministerial purposes of the organization. Everything is just fine. How do you sort of, I guess, break through maybe some of the denial involved in that situation involving a Christian organization?
Well, I actually wouldn't try to. You know, it's difficult to change other people. But what I encourage people to do is start where you are and do what you can. One of the things that can be a problem in a toxic workplace is it feels overwhelming. There's so many bad things going on. It's just like, how is this going to get fixed? But you just have to make a one step where you are, and that might be really there's two things to do. One is not engage in the negative conversations that are going. If somebody's talking, complaining, just excuse yourself and leave, and then try to be positive. But I think within that, you try to find other people that are relatively healthy and are positive, and you develop a little support group, not that you're, you know, against the leadership, whatever, but it's there to survive together. Trying to change people and organizations can really wear you out. So first, get the support you need and do what you can right where you are.
I'm curious, what advice would you offer here in our final moments together for leaders of small businesses or Christian organizations, either one, the organizational leader who's saying, man, I am really trying to create a healthy environment, not a toxic one. Give some advice there.
Well, yeah, and in fact, I just had an article come out in a Christian business magazine called 210 Magazine about can a Christian-led organization be toxic? And I think the thing for leaders to do is to ask themselves, really, am I treating my people well with respect and kindness? Am I being truthful and honest, and both with employees and customers? And do we have systems in place that help support that? Lots of times we found that there are three main parts of a toxic work environment: a sick system where they just don't have policies and procedures in place, or they do and they're not followed. Secondly, a toxic leader. And, you know, in the book we give the 10 top characteristics, and there's a checklist for yourself on that. And then dysfunctional colleagues, people that just blame, make excuses. And so I think taking an honest assessment and asking for feedback from at least starting with the people around you that you trust, and maybe even doing an employee survey to get some feedback.
The book is called Rising Above a Toxic Workplace. Dr. Paul White, he is a clinical psychologist. He's co-author on this. And you can find him and the book and related work at, and I love the domain name you picked out here, appreciationatwork.com. Spelled just like it sounds, appreciationatwork.com. Dr. White, thanks for what you do. Thanks for being with us. I look forward to coming back, having you come back and spend some non-toxic time with us as we talk about these all-important issues.
I hope to. Thanks so much, Austin. I appreciate it.
Good to be with you. Here's our number. It's 877-933-2484. Go ahead and give us a call if you'd like to win one of two copies of Dr. White's book. We'll do a drawing after the top of the hour at 8 o'clock, 877-933-2484. Get your name registered in the drawing. I'm Austin Hill. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. On the Faith Radio Network. Good morning and welcome. It's Wednesday morning and thank you for listening. I'm Austin Hill here weekday morning 6 till 8 as we seek to connect faith to life. We'll do the drawing coming up after 8 o'clock after the news at 8. Do a drawing for a copy of Dr. White's book about surviving a toxic workplace, a hot topic. You know, I was speaking with him and listening to his responses to my line of questioning. I thought, man, I wish I knew this guy 25 years ago. Anyway, things would have gone very differently. I would have made healthier choices, shall we say, had I had a resource like him available. But be that as it may, he's got a great new book. And we'll give away copies of that coming up after the news at 8 o'clock. Coming up tomorrow on our program, we're looking forward to yet another conversation with Dr. Reese from the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The concerns about the Ebola virus and its proliferation around the world, including here in our own country, in the United States of America, and around North America, the continent, those concerns are very valid, they're very real, and they should be dealt with in a straightforward and forthright sort of fashion, shall we say. I do believe Dr. Scott Reese and his associate, Dr. David Stevens of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations, I think they've really been, really kind of the voices of reason on this. They've been willing to say, yes, okay, here are the facts, but let's not get carried away. This is probably not going to become a huge global pandemic in the United States of America, and let's not take our eye off the ball. The church can play a phenomenally important and productive role in eradicating Ebola, stopping the death spiral in countries on the African continent. So Dr. Reese joins us tomorrow. We'll talk some about that. Also, there is a very extraordinary turn of events that is unfolding here in the United States of America. And it kind of has to do with, I guess you could lump it into the broader category of physician-assisted suicide. But there is a young woman in the state of Oregon. Her name is Brittany Maynard. And she has made a really, really big deal over the fact that she wants to end her life this weekend. And I have talked to Dr. Stevens about this a couple of times. He's brought this up in our conversations over the last two or three months. Earlier this week, I think it was Monday evening, my wife and I were at a grocery store together, and there at the checkout stand, one of the grocery store tabloid magazines, I'll call it. I don't remember if it was People magazine or one of those, but right there at the grocery store checkout, and you know what I'm talking about, one of those tabloid magazines, had a photo of this woman, very young, very attractive, very pretty lady. It's actually a couple of photos side by side. One appeared to be a wedding photo with her and what appeared to be her husband, you know, all dressed up, long, flowing, beautiful white wedding gown. And then the headline says, "Why I Want to End My Life." And it's such a mental sort of U-turn. Wait a minute, this woman is beautiful, she looks healthy, why would she want to end her life? Well, there is a story behind it. We won't get into that right here at the moment. But it really does beg some important questions, not the least of which is, should people be permitted to just take their life if they so choose? Should suicide not be a crime? These are things that I believe our Christian faith should speak to. We should speak to them ourselves, informed by our Christian faith. Dr. Reese joins us to talk about that and more coming up tomorrow. 7:58, I'm Austin Hill. Have a great day. Keep it here at Faith Radio. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. For more information about this, you can visit Austin Hill in the Morning, our program page, on myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com.